Good morning. This is Valley Warren from Madison Academic Staff Association. Today is April 21st, 2009, and we are interviewing Bill Steffenhagen for the purpose of collecting an oral history of academic staff governance at the UW-Madison campus. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning,
Valerie. We're going to start off. We have four areas we'd like to cover, one being your education prior to joining the University of Wisconsin-Madison. How you came to be here at UW-Madison, and then your role as an academic staff member here, and then your understanding of academic staff governance and its history. Let's start with your education prior to joining the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Where did you go to school, and what did you study?
You're talking about high school?
I'm talking about college.
Okay. My college was at the UW-Madison, so that's how I started here. I got a bachelor's degree in animal science in 1968. Was drafted, spent a little over a year in Vietnam during the Vietnam conflict, and then returned home. Came back to the universities to study for a master's of science degree in the Department of Veterinary Science, working with Ollie Ginther, a faculty member there. And got my master's in 1976. That was after I had actually started working at the university, because in 1972 I was working in Ollie Ginther's lab. And then that eventually, as a research specialist, and also as a graduate student.
And you want to tell us a little bit about your prelims or your thesis subject?
My thesis subject was in equine reproduction, horses, and primarily our lab studied the reproductive system of the mare. My contribution to the effort was to study the retention of oocytes in the uterine tubes of mares. The unique thing about that is that as eggs are ovulated, if they're not fertilized, they remain in the oviduct of the mare until they deteriorate over a number of years. And then if there is an egg that is fertilized, then the oviduct is flushed out into the uterus through normal procedure, and a birth occurs.
And was your thesis then published, and did you continue research after that?
There was a research publication, a couple of abstracts, and one formal paper that came out of it that was published. I worked in the laboratory, but I didn't continue on for a PhD or anything.
And how did you end up coming to work as an academic staff member here on campus?
Neil First was my advisor in animal science, and when I got back from out of the military, gave him a call and asked if there was anything happening, and he was aware that Ollie Ginther was looking for a graduate student. And that's how I got back into the system down here.
And you said that you began as a research specialist, which then led you to an academic staff position. Would you describe and tell us a little bit about how that process happened for you?
Basically, I was a graduate student for a couple of years. I didn't complete the master's right away, and then Ollie Ginther had some other funds and hired me as a research specialist, which was my first experience of being an academic staff member. And I was also doing research and continuing on.
So you eventually left the position as a research specialist. What position did you then take on?
Barney Easterday, who was the current chair of veterinary science at the time and later became the first dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine when it was established, he was looking for an assistant to the chairperson to take over some of the administrative day-to-day activities and things that the chair did, so he could concentrate on faculty issues and those sorts of things. And he came up one day when I was doing a graph using the old press letters and everything else, because it was back in the 70s, and he said he just went through the personnel files of the academic staff in the department, and he he obviously knew I was there since he was the chair, and he thought that I would probably make a good assistant to this, and he offered me a position. I was on soft money at the time, and so it wasn't a hard decision to make because it was a hard funded position.
I understand that. Okay. And so what did you perceive to be your expectations of that job when you started?
It was absolutely new. There was only one other person in the college. I think it was Judy Peterson, and Back T was the first person in that role. And it evolved. It's over time. And as time went on, more responsibilities were laid onto the position. When the Bookout Farm at Arlington, which at that time veterinary science was in Cal's, we lost Reader Farm and Google Farm, which were on Mineral Point Road to the research park. And so we picked up Bookout Farm, and the dean at the time and gave us $25,000, which doesn't seem like a lot of money, but back in the 1970s, you could actually do something with that. And I was tasked to work with the carpenter crew, and we built a service building, a research facility, and we staffed it and bought equipment and everything, and it was fun. It was a project, and we got it done.
Good. For $25,000.
Well, there were other funds put in by the college over time, but that's what we had to work with.
So what was UW-Madison like when you began to work as an academic staff member? How would you describe the university?
As I look back, I think I would describe it as maybe more personal. It was smaller. At that time, the funding from the state to university was on the plus side. The institution was getting additional resources, so the dean was always in a position where he could provide funds for a new position or that sort of thing. So it was on the positive. And so we weren't going, I think from an attitudinal point of view, there was a lot of positive because there were funds to make things happen.
Right.
And everything was smaller at that point too.
What was your immediate workplace like?
And just as point in history, that was pre-merger of the State University of Wisconsin system with the University of Wisconsin. So that was pre-merger politics.
So if you were to describe what your immediate workplace was like, not just the university as a whole, but taking it down to a smaller entity, what was it like for you as an academic staff member in the place where you worked?
It was absolutely fun. Ollie Genther was the type of person who worked hard, in other words, on his research. And he had a lab with about four or five, six graduate students, most of which some would do masters and quit, and others, probably majority of his people, would do a PhD. And I would say he was a research workaholic, and we spent hours in the out at the farms doing the research. But he was also, and this was prior to a lot of the alcohol laws, on Friday afternoon, the whole lab would go over to the bed. It's not there anymore. It's been tore down, but I think it was the Badger Tavern. And he would buy the beer, and we would just have one great time. And then we played hard. We had a lot of good times together. And then the rest of the week, we'd work hard. But it was fun.
So what were your responsibilities when you began?
Basically, when I was working as a research specialist with Ollie, was just running his laboratory, working with the other people, the postdocs and others, to set up experiments and keep things going, working with the farm crew.
So So how much freedom did you have and how much flexibility to develop or to address responsibilities within that unit?
Well, I think as a research specialist, I had a lot of flexibility. Obviously, you had to make sure things worked. And that's one of the things I enjoy. I enjoy working with people, and I enjoy getting things done and facilitating getting things done. So it was fun. We all got along real well.
So how closely aligned was your graduate work with what you were doing as an academic staff member?
Well, as the first couple of years when I was a research specialist, that was my research. Yeah. And so it was aligned. When Barney Easterday offered me the assistant to the chairperson, that was literally a new position, which was developed on the fly and evolved over time, and it depended on the person in the position, how it evolved. And like, as I mentioned, I think that was on this recording, the facility we did at Arlington, I mean, that's what the responsibilities, and I had, toward the end of my tenure there, we had two experimental farms. We had approximately 17 classified staff farm animal caretakers. Actually, we had, two farms, one in Arlington, and our glassware washing facility, our animal care in the building. I was in charge of it all. I just sort of ran all of that stuff.
Now, you had mentioned who you started with. How many different people did you work under then?
The chairs in veterinary science were very much into research and some also into a fair amount of teaching. And basically, they never, when they became chair, they continued to do their research, write their grants, keep their labs going. And I guess that's probably why I had so much was pretty much let to run the department, because the chairs took care of faculty business and their research labs. And the normal tenure of a chair in veterinary science was 4 to 5 years. I was there, I think I served 8 or 9 chairs.
Okay. So then that kind of begs the question, how long have you actually been an academic staff member then?
Officially, 1972 I started.
Okay. And you just retired this year?
December 30 of 2008.
Okay.
I don't want to go to December 30, 2009.
Now, looking at it now, what is your sense of the current or the existing relationship that you see between academic staff and faculty?
I think prior to governance, which came into play in the 80s, I think there was a very collegial relationship. They weren't playing power games, is what I guess I'd call it. With the advent of merger of the system in the early 70s, and then creation of Chapter 36 of the state statutes, in 1974, governance rights were granted to faculty in that statute and to students in that statute. This was after merger of the University of Wisconsin-Madison or University of Wisconsin system with the state Wisconsin State University system. And what happened there at the Wisconsin State University system, you had faculty, tenured and non-tenured faculty. So academic staff at those institutions were non-tenured faculty. In the University of Wisconsin system, you had faculty and you had academic staff. And when they merged the two systems, they took the University of Wisconsin model. Well, once governance rights were granted by statute to the faculty and to the students, and in the original chapter in 1974, Academy staff were not granted governance rights. And the collegiality of working together that had existed prior to merger started to erode because faculty said they had certain rights and we didn't have any. So some of the collegiality actually started to deteriorate after merger. Now, the Madison Academic Staff Association, MASA, actually came into existence in 1975 after merger. And one of the reasons it came into existence is because academic staff were feeling disenfranchised under the new governance created by Chapter 36. And so there was an effort. As a matter of fact, you had a lot of activists, people who were really involved in the university and how it worked, who were being sidelined over the years. And they became very irritated to the point where they were either pushing for collective bargaining at the state level to have a voice or some other means. And what happened in 1985, because of that, UW system did not oppose adding academic staff governance section to Chapter 36, which is 36094M. And ever since we got governance rights, then the assembly, ASEC, and all of the other things were created.
Now, you mentioned the activists. Who were some of the people who were activists at that time?
Oh, boy. Who's Shar's friend from way back, an advisor in education?
Is it Amy?
No, it's, I can't remember her name. I just can't.
Was it Joanne?
Joanne.
Elder?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay.
That Joanne Elder was the person who brought Shar Tortorisi into governance. And
okay.
She was one of the leaders of MASA at the time and that group. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to keep going in this particular vein, but I want to also address some of the questions that we've sort of passed. So what I think I'll do right now is just sort of begin to, how did you become an activist at this time? How did you become involved?
Well, by the time the middle 80s came rolling around, I think the governance statute was there in 87, and governance really got kicked off when they organized the assembly and that sort of thing after that. The first ASEC election, they were looking for possible people to be on ASEC, and Paul Jelly, he's still an assistant dean in the Cal's dean's office, he was part of the group that helped organize governance back then, and when they were looking for names, he gave me a call and said, would you run for ASEC? And, of course, nobody knew me, and I agreed to run. I was one of the no names, and I didn't win the election.
Okay.
And as a result of not winning the election, ASEC turned around and asked, and Paul Jelly again came back and asked if I was interested in either running for the Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee or to the Compensation and Economic Benefits Committee. And I guess I should back up, I had been in the university system as an academic staff member for a little over 10 years, and at that point, I thought that it was time to get involved in things.
Been around long enough to feel
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go back now to sort of finish up some of these questions. We're going to get to more of these academic staff governance issues in just a few moments. So you were talking earlier about prior to governance, the more collegial relationships, and then what happened with the merger of the 70s. So we were basically talking about attitudes when you began towards academic staff and generally, and then more specifically how you were treated. Would you want to elaborate a little bit on either of those, or do you feel that we've covered those?
I think at the department level, in the day-to-day job, the collegiality was always there, because there weren't any, it wasn't academic staff, faculty, governance related. You were just doing your job. Where the tension grew is when the governance issues. And at the beginning of governance, there were a lot of faculty committees that had no academic staff represented on them. And the early ASEC, well, one of the driving things that they tried to do was to get academic staff membership on faculty committees. And that was a tough sell, because the faculty, rightfully or wrongly, had the attitude that they ran the institution. But the early ASEC people, after, and there were times of confrontation with the university committee and others, and it was a hard slog. But they got membership on some committees, and over time, now today, I think we have membership on virtually all Chapter 6 faculty committees, except those that are specifically related to faculty personnel issues and maybe some academic stuff. So it's a plus.
So how many different academic staff activities have you been involved in? How many different organizations or groups?
Well, the Madison Academic Staff Association. I've been a member of that. I can't remember how long. I was president-elect, and I've been a board member, and I'm currently on the advisory committee. The ASPRO, which was created by the Academic Staff Assembly, which is a lobbying group started in Madison, added Milwaukee, and now is system-wide. I think I've been on the board of that almost from the very beginning, and I've also been president of it and vice president of it, and otherwise a board member. I'm currently past president.
Okay, because of retirement.
Yeah. And then also, as far as the governance groups, I served on the Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee for, I think, close to 6 years, chaired it for two. I served as on the Compensation and Economic Benefits Committee for, I believe 6 years, and chaired it for two. I served on Academic Staff Executive Committee, and the first two are elected by the Assembly, and ASEC is elected by academic staff at large. I was elected to 2 3-year terms, so I served 6 years on ASEC, was chair of it for two. Had a break in service, and then a couple of years before my retirement, they asked if I'd run for ASEC one more time, and so I was on ASEC, I think, for 2 years before I retired.
So a total of 8 years with ASEC.
It could be. Yeah, something like that.
Roughly. And you've done a little bit of this, but maybe sort of thinking it, or maybe putting some more out there, I don't know, but describe how academic staff governance came into being.
I've given you a little bit of that. When Chapter 36 was created with the merger of the two university systems, the merger eliminated the Coordinating Council on Higher Education, which was sort of the overall body that brought the two together and put a forward and created the Board of Regents, which is what we have today. What was the question again?
The question was, how did academic staff governance come into being?
Okay. As I mentioned, the academic staff in the state university system were non-tenured faculty, and here at Madison and the rest of the University of Wisconsin system were academic staff. Once the statute was created in 1975, governance rights were created for faculty and for students, but not for academic staff. They were left out. As I mentioned earlier, I think the relationship between faculty and academic staff in the classroom and the various things like that, where there was a lot of collegiality. The faculty started utilizing their rights, and over time, academic staff working with the faculty kind of, there was a boundary put there. And the Madison Academic Staff Association started in 1975, and the activists there were upset that they had lost their influence in academia, I guess, that they had before. And they pressed for action in the legislature to either have collective bargaining, to have a voice, and as an alternative, they worked with a legislator in Milwaukee who drafted and worked with MASA to draft the 36.094M language, which then was, Chapter 36 was amended in 1985 to give governance rights to academic staff, and UW system did not oppose that. So it went through. And once academic staff had that in 1987, I think it was that time frame, yeah, the Articles of Organization were ratified. This created the Academic Staff Executive Committee in 1987, as well as the Compensation Economic Benefits Committee, Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, and the Nominating Committee. And then the Assembly was formed, and everything's history after that.
So were you, and I did ask this a little bit too, but were you at all involved in how the governance structure sort of began?
No.
No involvement?
It was the movers and shakers on MASA at the time who did the articles, who put it together, what the Assembly would look like, what ASEC would look like, what the various committees would look like. I got involved after all of that hard work was done by former colleagues, and when they were doing elections to put people on committees.
Okay. And now this is more of on a personal note, but how did you get involved, and what made you decide that you wanted to pursue becoming involved in academic staff governance?
Well, I give Paul Jelly, the assistant dean, and currently still in CALS and still an assistant dean, credit, because he was one of the group working on creating governance, and he was on the nominating committee, the first nominating committee, and he thought of me as a possible candidate, because we had worked together, me being a department administrator, assistant to the chair, and he being an assistant dean, we'd worked together a lot.
Okay. And what was your first impression then of that process, that governance process?
It was just kind of fun to get involved, because it provided a formal mechanism for the voice of academic staff to be heard in the institutional governance. We didn't have that before. You could make your views known, and the people who had governance rights could say, thank you,
mm-hmm.
goodbye.
Yeah. So you had no real power. Yeah. When you began working with academic staff governance in the various capacities, what were some of the issues that were dealt with when you first became involved? What were some of the topics that were being covered?
The first big thing, and probably the biggest project, was when I ran for ASEC and was not elected because nobody knew who I was. Then I was elected to the Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, which Ann Wallace was a chair for close to 6 years there for a while. And we had the interesting thing about these first committees, you had the core people who really cared about governance and wanted it to work, and the people who had actually put in a lot of sweat and tears to get it done. Mm-hmm. And so when these people were elected to the various committees, a lot of things happened. Prior to governance, I forget what the old, I think it was ASE, or not ASE, the old policies and procedures for academic staff were hammered out by an earlier governance group, which was put together by the chancellor but had no real authority.
Okay.
And it was very much, I think it was just, it was a Madison version of the UW system rules that affect academic staff. And basically, there were virtually no rights, no protections. And you had annual reappointments. All academic staff had to be reappointed every year. So people got concerned if they didn't get a letter, whether they're going to have a job. There were a lot of not so positive employment relations things that were left over from prior to governance. So the Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, the first big task they took on was to write what we know today is Academic Staff Policies and Procedures, which I think is 10 chapters or something like that, which covers everything from definition to appointments to non-renewals to layoffs to discipline for cause, you name it. Those rules were written by the first Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, which I was privileged to serve on. And when I look back and how long it took us to write those things, I thought it was about 4 years.
Oh.
It took us 6 years to write ASPP. And the reason it took so long is because when you're writing personnel rules and you write a rule to address an issue, whether it's dismissal for cause, the appeals right, virtually you put down an idea and then you try to think of every possible variation and scenario to hit that.
Right.
And that's what took all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ann Wallace was chair for the first 2 years, and I think when we were doing this, we met on either, I don't know if it was weekly or biweekly, one morning, I think it was biweekly, and it took us 6 years to write them. Ann Wallace chaired it for the first 4 years, then she got a new dean that didn't think much of his staff participating in governance, so Ann had to step aside as chair, but she still served on the committee. At that point, I was elected chair, and I gave my charge to the committee was, we're going to get ASPP out the door. And so we finished the document, and we wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be against any existing UW system rules. So John Tallman, who was the legal counsel at UW system, we got him involved, and he went through the whole thing, and where he found issues that the regents may have a concern with because they aren't consistent with UWS, we resolved all of those. And the bottom line for Ann Wallace and I were, I wanted to get rid of the annual reappointment letter. And UW system was moot on that. They said you had to have an appointment letter, and so we were able to change requiring everybody had to get a renewal letter to have a job for the next year to a notice period to be notified if your job's going to be eliminated. And the notice period was on a scale based on your years of service. And so once the ASPP was implemented, we were able to eliminate the annual renewal. And it's interesting because I've also served on the UW System Academic Staff Reps. And to this day, there are institutions, and we hear complaints because they have annual reappointment letter that basically says you have a job this year with no expectation of renewal. And some of those people have been at the institution for 15, 20 years. They get the same letter every year.
Every year.
Yeah. And we eliminated that at Madison.
You talked about sort of this continuation. Is this part of like Rolling Horizons and things like that? You were eliminating. You said now it's a notice. If a job is eliminated.
You've got your fixed term appointments. are renewable, fixed term renewable, and that's basically you're appointed and your appointment is could be 1 year and it's renewable.
Okay.
But you don't have to receive a formal renewal. It's automatically renewed unless you're notified to the contrary. And of course, Rolling Horizon, UW System, and all the other campuses see Rolling Horizon as, let's say you have a 2 year Rolling Horizon. July 1st, which is the beginning, you have a 2 year Rolling Horizon. And under UWS rules and most of the campuses in the system except Madison, your appointment ticks down. So on June 30th, you have a 1 year and 1 day appointment.
Okay.
And once July 1st hits, you have a 2 year appointment again. Okay. Now at UW Madison, we changed the rule on that where our clock ticks daily. So if you have a 2 year Rolling Horizon appointment, you have a 2 year Rising appointment every day until you're notified it's
okay.
going to be terminated or reduced, and then the clock starts ticking down.
Interesting. I didn't know this.
But I think Madison's the only campus that has that. And that was Academic Staff Governance in Action.
In action, Okay.
That's still going, that's good.
How effectively do you feel that academic staff has responded to issues that matter to you?
To me?
Yes, personally.
Oh, I've been involved in academic staff governance in one way or another since its inception, and I don't see it personally at all. When we wrote ASPP and tried to make those changes, we were looking at how it would benefit the academic staff in the trenches. We always kept the academic staff in the trenches, in front of us, and every committee I've served on. And every, whether it's BASEC or whatever it is, I don't look at anything personally. I look at everything for academic staff as a whole and what we can do for them. And if we accomplish something, I just feel good.
Keeps moving.
Yeah. I don't take personal pride in anything. And I think when I was chair of ASEC, I would have an idea of what I wanted to try to accomplish, but I think the sign of a good leader is you have an idea of what you want to be accomplished, and then you involve everybody, and you develop that idea. And I found that at the end of the process, you probably got something that's far superior to what you may have put on the table to spearhead in the beginning. And I think that's what makes academic staff so great, because we're so diverse in everything we do, whether it's teaching, research, in the lab, being a scientist, or a lab bench person. But everybody I think brings a lot to the table, and I think that's a strength, actually.
Me too. So do you feel that participation in academic staff governance is well regarded and supported on this campus?
I think in the beginning you had the movers and shakers, primarily from Mass organization and others that got involved, who were looking to make a difference. And I think by and large a difference was made.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in anything, when you get something new, you work hard at it, a lot of people do a lot of things, and I think now we've sort of lost some of that zest, some of that desire, some of that push, and it's become almost, oh, I got to serve on a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so my concern is that we don't lose the things that we've gained. And quite frankly, I think over the last 10 years, my concern is the movers and shakers aren't there anymore. And that's why I think mentoring and developing and getting a new, mindset or a new group of movers and shakers coming through the system is important.
So what do you feel has been the longest lasting or most significant issue that you have been involved in?
Well, on the Personnel Policy and Procedures Committee, getting ASPP out the door, Academic Staff Policy and Procedures, and that was a joint effort with everybody on the committee. I mean, there was no one person there that was responsible for that. It just was a yeoman's effort, and we have worked with Steve Lund on a regular basis, so he was very instrumental in that. Well, so that's a biggie, mm-hmm. But that on ASEC, when I was chair, I think there were two things that when any group goes through a growing period or a new and coming. As chair, I experienced competition with our standing committees. The nominations committee nominates academic staff for committees, and ASEC appoints them. The nominating committee chair at the time, and I won't mention his name, had determined that since they were the nominating committee, that they should be the appointing committee. And so there was a rough period while I was chair where he stood up before the assembly and basically said that the nominating committee should be given the authority to make appointments, and can we really trust ASEC to make these appointments? And I had to sit there and be nice. But I have to admit that the assembly they formed a committee. They took the bull by the horns, and the committee reported back that the nominating committee should stay within its role of nominating, and that ASEC should make the appointment. So it all worked out.
Good, good. Did you have an opportunity to speak to the issue that was being raised about this?
I could speak to it, but boy, I couldn't take him on. I had to. We had to just lay back. I met with the gentleman, I think, privately. About the role of governance, the role of the committee, and when I would get out of the meeting with him, I had a feeling that we had communicated, mm-hmm. And the next time, he was right back where he started. So it was till the assembly told him, the committee, that's your role, okay. And that's it. The other thing, which was, and that's the governance structure itself, the other thing I think that was important, I felt that we had achieved a lot at the campus level. We had ASEC, we had the standing committees, they were working well with the chancellor and the provost, and with the university committee as well. But we hadn't made any progress below the level. And so I brought to ASEC the idea that we create committees on academic staff issues at the school, college, and division level. And it basically, I fashioned it from the faculty's version of the UAPCs or whatever,
okay.
Their version, and just when they did a lot of things nice, and why not steal it and
exactly.
just and refashion it to your. But the interesting thing to me is when I put this together and I brought it to ASEC. The first reaction I got was, whoa. Do we want to do this, and do we want to create this? And finally, I convinced ASEC it was the right thing to do, and we fashioned it and changed it. And then we took it to the assembly, and they said, whoa, isn't that going to eat into our authority? I really want to do this. And then we had a long discussion, and the assembly finally passed it. And now we have CASIs, or Committees on Academic Staff Issues, active, and I think the School of Education was probably the first one to crank up and go. It took us, again, I'd say a period of 5, 6 or more years to get all of the units to buy in.
Okay.
And as chair of ASEC, I was asked to be invited to the Dean's Council so that I could just inform them. of the creation of the legislation and ask them if they could help with it. And I'll tell you what, that was a most interesting experience because I just briefly got up when I was, and I introduced it. I says, the academic staff has passed this legislation to create these committees and just ask for their cooperation. And just, it was advisory to the dean to bring academic staff issues to the dean. The first reaction was a dean sitting to my left, who remained nameless, and he looked at me and he says, you mean that academic staff can pass legislation without approval of the faculty? And I looked at him and I said, yes. And then I asked if they'd go ahead and... And then the dean of the graduate school, who was Virginia Hinshaw, and I will mention her, said, another committee? I've been trying to get rid of committees. And that was the response I had in the dean's council. So last time I went and visited him.
Yeah.
But we got the committee set up over time. So.
Good. So did the dean council eventually agree to it, or how did it then move forward if you had such a strong negative
reaction? Well, we basically waited. The School of Ed pounced, got right on it and got theirs up and running, and we used peer pressure. We said, hey, they've got it in the...
Okay.
We've got it over there. Why don't you have it here? And some of the deans were receptive, and they would say, hey, it's working okay over here. You probably should set it up. So we just used that kind of a... And then we would also send out a letter and say, these are the units that have set up these, when will you have yours set up? So, but I think we all know, if a dean sticks their foot in the sand and says, I'm not going there, it's very hard to make him or her go there.
Right, right. Yeah, I've served on the School of Ed's CASSIE, so you really are just a recommending body. You bring issues.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But it's bringing issues that the dean may not receive any other way.
Right. To understand that his academic staff feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, personally now, what accomplishments are you most proud of?
Well, I think committees on academic staff issues.
Okay.
Being involved with the ASPP. And I think ASPRL, the lobbying organization, which has worked downtown and kept our pay plans together with the faculty every time that the legislature tried to pull them apart. And I think those are the things that have been most enjoyable.
Now, are there additional things that you want to add that perhaps we haven't covered or things that you think would enrich this particular aspect of the interview?
Well, I'm not sure. All I can say is that to just add to it, I've always been an individual who wants to get something done. Maybe it's a strong word. I don't like to be on committees that sit and talk and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, the committees I've participated in have been doers and not talkers.
All right. I'm going to thank you very much, and we will be back at this again on Thursday with some new topics or new issues.